We need to talk.
There's something I'd like to talk to you about.
I'm listening. Talk to me.
It's time to Talk It Over, starring Diane Diamond, Lee J. Berman, and Louise Palanker. Give us a call at 888-531-7171. Email us at talkitover@gmail.com. You can talk to me. Talk to me. Join us online at talkitoverradio.com. You can talk to me. Talk it over. You can set your secrets free, baby. Because we're ready to talk it over.
Who counted how many times the word talk was used in our introduction?
Oh, I did.
How many?
17.
She's really? Always the teacher's pet, isn't she?
She's the perfect child.
No, that's Diane. I just made it up.
Welcome to Talk It Over. I am Louise Palanker, a nosy student of human behavior, and with us is our very qualified professional mediator, Lee J. Berman.
Hello. Dun, da, da.
And on the East Coast, our perfect student, perfect attendance, Diane Diamond.
Present.
And in the studio.
Present and accounted for.
Here in the studio with us, our fantastic engineer, Matt Sigmund.
Yay, hey, Matt.
Everybody.
Hey,
we have
Matt.
Producer Trish. It's hard to say producer Trish, but she's not on mic. She's shy. But she's here in case anybody's taking notes.
The show
notes
would not happen without her.
Anyone's
That's
taking
right.
attendance, she is present. What is going on in the news, Diane Diamond?
Oh, my gosh. There's so much going on in the news. Yeah, you know, Britney Spears is out and being her bad self. I don't even want to talk
Excuse
about
me,
her anymore.
She has a mental disorder.
Oh, she, duh, you
kind,
think?
Be kind.
Have we labeled that?
If well, she didn't I know think... how to sing and dance, she would be a homeless person.
Yeah, I'm not sure she even does that very well anymore. But the big guy in the news, I think, this week, especially since last night he went back to jail, is O.J. Simpson. Have you heard about this?
And we would know him from?
He's, you know, that famous double murderer.
Oh.
I mean, wait. He was never convicted.
Yeah, civilly. Sorry, anyway. Civilly. He murders very civilly.
That's right. Anyway, O.J. Simpson's back in custody in Las Vegas, Nevada. Simply put, he violated the terms of his parole. You know, everybody knows what happened. He took a group of guys. Some of them were armed. They went to a hotel room to get his stuff back.
It was his stuff.
A.K.A. steal it.
He wanted it back.
You know.
It was his stuff.
He wanted it back.
Sure.
Yeah.
You need a gun for that.
Anyway, he's going to go to trial for that. And in the meantime, the judge did a little mediation of his own at the hearing. And he said, all right, look, I'll let you go back to where you live in Florida until the trial date if you'll be a good boy and you do XYZ. And part of the XYZ was don't contact any of the witnesses in this case. I don't want you mailing them, calling them, emailing them, even communicating via carrier pigeon.
That's so strict. He wouldn't let him jury tamper?
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Witness tamper. Please, Lee J, don't accuse him of jury tampering. That's rude. slanderous. Go ahead, Diane. Anyway, witness tampering, yes. Go ahead. We lost Diane. Because she'd be talking by now. I know
Diane.
Her. I know
Oh,
her.
Hi.
Hi, Diane.
You pressed the mute button again.
I don't know.
And on the East Coast, we have Diane Diamond.
So, Diane, he was witness tampering. What happened? Who did he call? What did he do?
Well, this is allegedly. He was allegedly, he had his bail bondsman call one of the witnesses who was in the room to tell him that O.J. was unhappy with the way he'd been testifying at the hearings. Well, you can't do that. So the judge ordered him back to Vegas, took him into custody, and he's in jail right now.
Right now he's in jail?
Yeah. Do I hear a round of applause anywhere?
Does that make anybody feel safer?
There you go. I don't know. Anyway, but I mean, you know, Lee J, as a professional mediator, what the judge was up to. He was trying to get him to agree to be a good boy until the trial started. And doesn't seem like O.J. can even do that.
What's the expression? He screwed up. He trusted him.
Exactly. You know what? I was the judge surprised. I mean, would you be surprised if you had been mediating that?
You know, it's a funny thing because in mediation we sort of have to take people at their word, which is really difficult because the thing that usually got them there was somebody broke their word. So, you know, at least in a court of law, you have to sort of raise your hand and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I don't even have that going for me in a mediation. People just walk in and whisper all kinds of things in my ear that could be true or could not be true.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how you would even think that you could trust somebody like O.J. Simpson, but maybe that's just me. But how do you, when you sit down as a professional mediator, how do you get through to somebody like O.J. who thinks that they're above the law? Okay, yeah, I heard I'm not supposed to contact the witnesses, but I'll figure out a way around that.
It's a difficult task. You're trying to take somebody who has this sense of entitlement, who believes that they're above the law, that whatever the judge is saying applies to somebody else who would be in their shoes, but certainly not to them.
Not a Heisman Trophy winner.
Of course not.
That's not what I read. I mean, I read that. Yeah, go ahead.
What you really have to do is just get to them with the cost-benefit analysis. They've got to take a look at what it's going to cost them if they go against the judge's orders, remind them that this is going to be the judge who's going to be presiding over their trial, and the last thing that they want to do is have this judge upset with them and make them aware of what the cost is to any action that they might be contemplating. But that only lasts, truly, as long as I'm in front of them, and by the time they walk out of the room, you know, they've convinced themselves that they're still back above the law.
Could anybody in OJ's circle have convinced him that he really needed to adhere to the admonitions of the judge?
Well, I know Yale Galanter, his attorney, because as a reporter, a court reporter, I've been in courts with him, and he's a very smart guy. He's a very firm guy. I've seen him take OJ aside and just, you know, whisper in his ear like, listen, damn it. Yeah. So I am sure that Yale Galanter told him, now look, this judge is not kidding around. And OJ said, oh, yeah, okay. But there's like some kind of screw loose or something in some people's heads, I'm not saying OJ, but yes, I am. Anyway, where they just don't think any of the rules apply to them.
Well, here's the other thing. You're looking for somebody who they've surrounded themselves with to talk some common sense into them. And the problem is they've surrounded themselves with people who are going to yes them, or who they know that they don't have to listen to. So he may go out and hire the best attorney and the best business manager and the best everything else. But when those people give him good, sound advice, he's still going to choose not to listen to it, because he won't hire an attorney who's going to sit him down in a chair and yell at him and put a finger in his face and say, you dumb such and such and such and such, you're going to do this, or you're going to find yourself a new lawyer. He needs somebody to take him to the woodshed, and he wouldn't dare hire somebody to surround himself with who would do that to him.
BJ, excuse me. He has the rushing record. What are you talking about? Are you forgetting? You know, this is so disrespectful. We need to move on to the next topic.
Wait, I don't see Walter Payton out
really
murdering
anybody.
I don't
understand you people and your logic.
But you know what? What he's saying, though, exactly. It's the same thing with Britney Spears. I mean, she hired all these people. She didn't listen to them. Then she fired them. Then she hired new publicists and attorneys and managers and whatever. And then she fired all of them.
Because she doesn't have to listen to people, because Hit Me Baby One More Time is a really good song.
Oh, Jesus. I get it.
For nobody.
Okay, so there's no mediation with some people, I guess, is what you're saying.
Well, you do the best you can to convince them, and you try to make it deep enough that it'll last, but that's all you can do. I mean, narcissism runs very, very, very deep, and to penetrate that deeper than it runs is next to impossible.
So it's almost like a mental illness, or it is a mental illness.
I think we need to get OJ on the show, despite what Wheezy would do if we did that, and we have to talk it over with OJ.
All right, well, my mother is not going to kiss him this time. That's a long story.
Your mother kissed O.J. Simpson?
See episode 9 or something.
I'm afraid so. I'm from Buffalo, and he came over for dinner.
And why did she do that?
Well, it was Shabbos.
Oh,
we'll talk about
that. Explains everything. I'm Catholic. I have no idea what you're talking
about. That's for a whole other issue. Well, yeah, we'll talk about it another day. Yeah, you know, I'm still haunted by it. Okay, we have a caller on the phone, and his name is Philip, and I understand he's having a problem with somebody that he works with in his law firm. Are you there, Philip?
Yes, hello.
Hello, welcome to Talk It Over.
Thank you very much.
Philip.
How can we help you?
Well, the issue that is concerning me is that a senior partner in my law firm has started a relationship with one of the younger female associates, and it's created a problem in the office.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean by relationship, you mean they hold hands and skip?
No, they've had a romantic relationship, and in fact, they kept it secret from the other attorneys for quite some time, and eventually when they did reveal that they were dating, there was a concern that there would be favoritism shown to this attorney, and later on, when they eventually did get married, the favoritism favoritism not only continued, but it seemed to be more exaggerated. So the other attorneys in the office, the female attorneys in particular, seemed to be upset over what could have happened, what could happen, and where they stand with respect to their careers.
Wow, and you would think that he would go out of his way to make sure he wasn't showing favoritism to this person.
You would think so, but it doesn't appear that way, even on any level.
And how does this directly impact you?
It doesn't really directly impact me, except in the sense that as a member of the law firm, I'm concerned about the law firm's reputation and potential, not just standing in the community, but if one of the other attorneys is so dissatisfied with the way that they're treated that they decide to sue the firm, then it makes me a potential defendant.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Lee J?
That's a hard thing in a law firm where you're responsible for all your partner's actions from a liability standpoint to start with.
Yes, it is.
But working backwards, I completely agree with what Wheezy said, that you would think that he would be mindful of not just actually being fair, but maintaining an appearance of fairness over and above that. And
I wish that your words were getting through to the person who needed to hear them. But I think he's heard them from other people and doesn't seem to take heed.
Philip, can you give us a timetable on this? This is a senior partner who had an affair and then married a junior attorney, she being the junior attorney. How long did they date and how long have they been married? Is this like a new phenomenon in the office?
It started, I think, a few years ago and then developed into an open relationship after they were dating, I would say, approximately 6 months. And then after that, they got married about a year ago.
Well, the good news is, and you may know the law better than I do, but my sense is that while they were dating, that could have created some real issues. But now that they're married, it seems to me that what you've got now is a family business.
Yeah, it is a family business, but the favoritism that's shown to the now wife of the senior partner is so pronounced in the hours that she's expected to work, the times that she's expected to show up at the office, the court appearances that she's expected to make. It seems to be so so slanted in a way that she's protected by the senior partner that the other attorneys are it seems, forced to carry more than their load.
Now, certainly you've talked with the other attorneys in the firm about this, I imagine.
Oh, yes.
And it's been going on long enough that I assume it's been a topic of conversation.
Oh, we've had several meetings about it.
So there's a lot of resentment.
Resentment, yes.
And have you discussed what you might do as a group to maybe move forward as a group and present your point of view? Or
we have tried to, and we've spoken with other senior partners about it, and there doesn't seem to be very much that results from any of the conversations that we've done. And to get involved in litigation within the office, I mean, we'd be shooting ourselves in the foot.
True.
Yes.
So does he just pay you lip service, or does he flat out say, no, I don't think it's a problem?
I have not confronted him personally with it.
Have any of the other senior partners, Philip, have they taken him aside and you're causing
belief,
a problem in the office?
That they have, and he insists to them that they're wrong and that there's no favoritism, and that he's above board with all of that he's doing, and that he doesn't think that there's anything wrong.
So, Philip, when you say meetings, you're talking about meetings amongst the others, but not meetings that would be like an intervention with him.
Correct.
It seems to me that's what you need to do. It seems like you've got to sit down with a unified front with all the rest of the partners in the firm and call a partner meeting or frankly, hijack a partner meeting that's already on the books.
We had one that was scheduled soon, and it's been rescheduled. I think it'll be coming up fairly soon, and I think this item really needs to be on the agenda.
Okay, I agree with you completely. I think it's important that you have the conversation with him, but how you have that conversation is going to mean everything in the world. If you try to tell him that he's wrong, or he can't keep doing it the way he's doing it, or something like that, he's going to be in a position, especially being a good senior attorney, he's going to make a valid logical argument back with you about why what he's doing is okay. But if you speak from a place that takes his defenses away, that disarms him, and say things like, I need you to understand how this impacts my life and my career. What it means to me is X. And it sounds to me like you haven't had that conversation with him in private, let alone in front of others who are going to chime in and feel the same way. But if he hears the female lawyers in the office, in the firm, say, you have no idea what it's like for me to work the hours that I'm working and watch her get promoted past me or watch her get the better cases and know that my career has taken a back seat to hers no matter what I do, and then have you voice what's important to you about it and how it's affecting you and your concerns about liability within the firm, and have the other partners voice theirs, soon he's going to understand that his actions really are impacting you all. And that
your suggestion is very well taken. My concern is that as soon as he is confronted, even by one of the other female attorneys or a group of the female attorneys, with their concerns about this, he has in the past shown such, not a violent temper, but an attitude that makes everybody fearful of retribution. So when confronted with this, even in a calm fashion, and how it's impacting on other people's, not only their careers, but their perception of their potential advancement, that the way that he might react is of a concern, so that everyone has sort of been walking on eggshells around him and around the issues, so that we don't have any kind of eruption.
So he's prone to hostility, and you guys are all tap dancing around that, and you're enabling him to continue to keep you all at bay.
That's part of it, but I also hear you say when we confront him, this is how he responds. So the easy answer is to say then don't confront him. Just express concerns to him and express your own insecurities, your own discomfort in a way that doesn't make him to blame, but in a way that just says, it's hard for me to continue to work at the firm because X. And if he hears that from a lot of people, he's going to see his own firm falling apart and have to make a choice that if he wants to keep it together, there are certain things he's going to have to do to meet those needs of yours.
The firm is way too successful that anyone would consider leaving over this.
Ah, interesting.
Now, can I just jump in and ask a few quick questions?
Yeah.
Is this a big firm? How many people are we talking about?
Oh,
and, Philip, more importantly, do you think that you really have the backing of the majority of the other lawyers in that office who will agree to sit in a meeting and look at all the partners and look at this man in particular and his wife, who will be sitting right there, and speak up?
Discussed it, and the general consensus is that no, they don't want to do it.
And I had no idea the firm was that large, too. That's if it's making the kinds of waves and having the kinds of impact that you're describing in a firm that large.
We have several offices.
Okay.
Several offices, and this is occurring in one of the offices where.
But you don't have a consensus group that will agree to sit up and stand up and speak up.
The consensus group has gone to the other senior partners with the concerns, but not confronted this particular one himself. So we were hoping that the other senior partners would go to him and take on the situation, and unfortunately that just hasn't happened.
Why do you think they're not more concerned? It affects morale, it affects everyone. Why do you think they're taking this stance? Are they afraid of him as well?
I couldn't speak to whether they were afraid of him, or maybe they're just hoping that eventually it will just subside and people will forget about it. But
he'll get her pregnant and she'll stay home.
What I was going to suggest. Get the woman knocked up, for goodness sake.
And this from the women on the team.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna quote a former president of the United States of America. Sometimes life just ain't fair. Maybe the thing is that this situation is been accepted. The law firm is still very successful, and that's the way it's going to be. And if you don't like it, lump it and go find another job. I mean, that is really what the partners are telling all of you, isn't it?
Basically.
And Philip, let me drill down a little bit deeper. You've called us. What do you want from us?
I was hoping that I could get some direction in some other avenue that I might be able to approach this from, rather than confronting him, or even in a non-confrontational, taking your advice and maybe just inviting him out for a drink or for lunch and saying, look, I have these concerns in the way that it's impacting, because I just don't think that he'll react well to hearing any kind of criticism. I mean, I don't think it has worked to go to the senior partners. I don't think I can get a consensus of people to sit down with him. I'm just looking for maybe another idea, some way besides an anonymous letter.
Yeah.
cutting the letters out of a magazine and pasting them onto a piece of paper.
Well, Philip, in order to help you with that, what I really need to understand is if we take all the female associates and partners in the office and set them aside, and we take all the other senior partners who aren't coming to your rescue and having, as far as you know, a conversation with him that's had any impact or change, let's just look at you for a minute. How is this affecting you?
The concerns that I have is I have worked for a long time to achieve my status in the firm. And actually, the hours that I work compared to the hours that she's expected to work, the pay that I receive compared to the pay that I imagine that she's receiving, the venues that I have to make appearances at, both near and far, compared to the appearances that she has to make. When you have favoritism being expressed, it impacts on everyone, including me. And it's not that I'm resentful because I've worked my way to a position where I have a good gig, but I still, in the back of my mind, I'm carrying someone else who's not, you know, she's not pulling her own weight.
And now we're talking, because you're describing a problem that a lot of the people listening out there have right now, too, that there's somebody else in the office who's getting favorite treatment, and here you are pulling the heavyweight and going and earning your stripes, and you're basically carrying her, and she's getting the easiest jobs.
There you go.
So what
that's
I heard...
in a nutshell, yeah.
Good.
And you're not willing to sleep with anyone?
My wife won't let me date single or married.
She's tough that way, huh? We're going to have to work on your negotiation skills. Now, here's the thing. I heard you say the salary you imagine she's being paid, and you know what assignments you have, and you know some of the assignments that she has. It sounds to me like the first thing you've got to do is fill out your information profile. I would meet with the senior partner. Are you on pretty good terms with him? Okay. I would take him to lunch, someplace private.
Is this a guy with the wife that he had the affair with, or is this another senior partner?
Yeah.
Another senior partner. The one that has married the junior associate, and I have never had a strong relationship.
Ah.
Okay. All right. Then maybe you need to go to the other senior partner with whom you have a good relationship and just ask questions. Come from a place of not knowing and let him fill in the blanks for you. It seems like I'm getting sent all over tarnation, and she's getting the real easy appearances, the big fat clients, and I'm having to work to bring in my own, or you know, whatever your situation is with her.
And the same paycheck.
But ask. Find out. Mm-hmm. You know, I get the impression, because of her relationship with so-and-so, that she might be making really good money, and I feel like I'm having to scratch and claw to earn the living that I'm making. And have him talk to you about what she's making relative to you. Have him give you confidence, or at least hear your concerns, but ask a lot of questions first. So that
I can do that, and I think that is a good idea.
Because that's better than accusations.
I do have access to the other senior partners, and they are more willing to confide, I think, and to express, or at least give answers to questions if I phrase them in that way.
And
I have not done that, and that is a good suggestion.
It's helpful, because if you're making accusations, they can defend them. But if you're asking questions, then they have to answer you more honestly.
Very good.
The next thing is, once you figure out the answers to this, having the conversation with them about your concerns is a much stronger conversation if you're really talking from your own concerns rather than all of us kind of feel, or the women in the office are feeling, or something like that. If you if you just talk from your concerns and have a conversation with them about how this impacts you and what your concern is for your family and, you know, those sorts of things, that will have much more traction with them. And then you'll find those partners doing something for you because they're trying to help you address those concerns. That's easier for them to respond to.
And he shouldn't bring up the fact, though, Lee J, that they're, and I'm not the only one in the office that is thinking like this.
I wouldn't, frankly, because each of the other people.
It actually is already. There have been plenty of discussions, and they're well aware that it's not
exactly
my concern. There's snickering and there's jokes and there's constant undercurrent.
And those are things that the senior partners should be told about, because I'm sure they're not in the break room when those jokes are happening. Mm-hmm. And they need to understand that it's affecting the reputation of the firm, the self-respect that its own members have within the firm. You're concerned about the legal community and things like that. But the truth is, the strongest conversation you can have with them is about you and your career and your advancement, and have that. Because in my experience, when people are saying, you know, a lot of people feel the same way I do, it tends to sound, it risks sounding whiny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you talk about mm-hmm. your own concerns personally, first person, then you're at a place where you're being very genuine and sincere, and they have to respond to that.
I'm going to give that a try.
All right, Philip.
And thank you, Philip, so much for giving us a call. I think this is a problem that a lot of people can relate to, and we really appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, very much. Thanks for calling. Talk it over.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye, Philip.
And you know what? We should tell Philip and everyone who calls in that you can always go back to our website and listen. I know that we all give you lots of advice when you call, and you're thinking about your next question, and you might not catch everything, and you might want to take notes on it. You can go back to the website, right, Louise?
Yes.
And listen to a replay of the show and take notes on it.
You can listen to every show is posted on the website. You can give us a call if you have a concern that you'd like us to talk over at 888-531-7171. You can email us at talkitover@gmail.com, and we're happy to help you.
Yep. The website address is www.talkitoverradio.com. And by the way, our phone number will take your voicemail during the week when we're not on the air. So please leave us voicemails, and we'll be glad to deal with them when we hit air on Saturdays.
Yeah, but again, you can listen to the show any old time at Talk It Over Radio, right? TalkItOverRadio.com. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Let's get back to the news. Diane Diamond, what is going on?
Well, you know, we were talking about O.J. Simpson just feeling like he's above the law, doesn't have to do what a judge tells him. He can contact witnesses and whatever.
Like I said,
now he's in jail. I can't help but laugh about that. But another person who seems to me to just be conducting his life without any regard to what people are saying or thinking about him is the president of France.
Yes.
What's that?
Oh, no, I was just interjecting this sense of entitlement that a lot of powerful
right.
people seem to have. Go ahead.
Well, is the president of France. Have you guys been following this story? I know we don't usually do international stories, but you talk about a guy who needs a mediation session. His name is Sarkozy, Nicolas Sarkozy. He's been divorced for about 3 months from his second wife, and she was beautiful. And now he's taken up already with this Italian model who's even more beautiful and younger. I hate her. Anyway, her name is Carla Bruni, and she's beautiful. She's just beautiful. And Sarkozy is running all over the world with this woman instead of being the president of France. He's even taking her on like state trips. And there are other governments like India, like Egypt, who don't know what to do with this guy and his what they consider a concubine. They don't know whether to, you know, get her a separate hotel or, you know, put her in a separate motorcade. They don't know the protocol for things like this because it's not allowed in their country.
In France? There was he is divorced though, right?
He is divorced, but I mean, even the French people are up in arms about it. They're romantics. They understand this stuff, but they feel like he's throwing it in their faces. One of the newspapers said the French people did not elect him to be a rock star. He forgot that he should have a romance with France and not with himself and his paramour. So they're really, can I say this, pissed off at their own president.
You have to say pissed off.
The pièce de résistance.
Okay, so he sees London, he sees France, he sees somebody's
Carla
underpants.
Carla Bruni's underpants.
Her name. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Her name is Carla Bruni.
Bruni.
Or Brunei, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe he, I don't know, Lee J. I mean, because he should have a sense of the pulse of his peoples, or not just his people, but the international community, that he's sort of behaving like a schoolboy. Yes?
You know, I don't know. I don't want to take the guy's side just because I'm the guy on the team, but I've got to say, Diane, you hit the word right on the head when you said rock star. Nicolas Sarkozy is taking his role as the president of France as that of a rock star. And he is traveling all over the world because he sees part of his role in what France needs in the world economy right now to rebuild their relationships. When they didn't join the Allied troops in Iraq and things like that, he took
rebuilding relationships. Yeah.
but the country took a lot of heat, and they had trade restrictions placed on them and things like that, and they fell out of favor. And he's out there doing everything he can to glad hand with national leaders from powerful nations and rebuild their trade relationships. And I think he thinks that every time he's on the front cover of a newspaper, he's doing a good thing for France.
Yeah, but in the meantime, he's trying to rebuild this, you know, the reputation of the country. And they're all going like, ooh la la, what do we do with this woman? You know, is embarrassing.
He's going to marry her, though, right? Aren't they engaged now? He and Carla?
Well, yeah, he gave her, oh God, are you ready for this? Louise, yes. She got a 4.5-carat heart-shaped diamond ring. So I guess they are getting married.
So the job pays well.
I don't think that's a friendship ring.
Let's see, 2 months' salary.
Yeah. Sacré bleu. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I guess they are going to get married. I think the biggest roadblock here and the biggest problem from the French people's point of view is he's not tending to business. So what do you do with somebody who's not tending to business when they're clouded by love, puppy love? Yeah. I mean, how do you sit them down and have a conversation with them? How do you talk it over?
So you're saying, wait, hold up. A president who's not doing his job. I don't know that we can relate to that.
You are such a cynic.
I thought we reelected them for another 4 years. That's what we did.
Yes, that's what we did in America.
Only if they take enough vacation, then they qualify for reelection.
Lee J?
Well, you know, my only point about Carla and his relationship with Carla is at least he's making a legitimate woman out of her in the sense that she's not a concubine or some of the things that they're calling her because he is engaged and going to be married to her. But in the French people's interest, they elected somebody who was in a stable marriage, a stable relationship, somebody who they thought they knew what they were getting, and he's taken office and now divorced his wife, who the French people loved, and now is taken up with somebody new. And the French people are kind of acting like the children of a divorce, saying, you know, wait, we want our parents back together again. Aww. We don't like the new stepmom because she's our age.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
That's true. But how do you sit somebody down and try to talk it over with them when they're blinded by love?
It's a great question.
Is what it seems like. I just saw them posing in front of the pyramids in Egypt so they could watch the sunset. It's like, hello.
Yeah.
You know, your country has riots. Wake up.
Yeah, and you're on a honeymoon.
Yeah.
But if you think about him, this is the difficulty. To answer your question, Diane, how do you talk it over with him? This is somebody who doesn't want to talk about his private life. And if you remember when he was on 60 Minutes or 2020 or one of those, and Leslie Stahl or somebody asked him about his relationship with his wife at the time, and he took the earpiece out of his ear and set it down
and walked off
the set.
And that's it?
Yeah. So my sense is if you tried to say, okay, President Sarkozy, we'd like to sit down and have a conversation with you and some of the delegation of the people of France who are concerned you're not doing the job right, he would engage them in what they think he's not doing right as the president. But as soon as they mention the relationship, he would walk out of the room.
Yeah.
So can they, they can't just fire him?
The truth is, I think big picture, you know, on a macro scale, I think what he's doing is partly what France needs to help boost their international trade economy right now. But he's not looking after domestic affairs, and it's not even unusual for us to elect a president who focuses more on international or more on domestic issues. And clearly he's focusing more on international relationships and making himself the next Tony Blair.
She is from Italy, so I guess that is an international relationship.
And she's some sort of a model.
A model turned singer.
Do you want to play the clip of him walking off? It looks like Matt has pulled it up
here. And this really does display... he has a certain amount of hubris, which I think any politician probably must have. But this really does show it. One moment here.
But when the Bulgarians gave the Sarkozys a Medal of Honor in early October, Cecilia was a no-show. The day we interviewed him, Paris was buzzing with rumors that she had left him again. But ask him about it? How dare you?
Since we've been here, it seems that every day we're hearing another story about your wife. What's going on?
If I had something to say about Cecilia, I would certainly not do so here.
But there's a great mystery. Everybody's asking. Even your press secretary was asked at the briefing today. No comment?
He was quite right to make no comment, and no comment. Thank you.
Sarkozy decided the interview was over. And off he went.
Bon courage.
With the question about his wife left hanging.
Wow.
Leslie Stahl, 60 Minutes, hit it right on the head. You try to talk it over. It's like Philip, who called just a minute ago to talk it over radio. He wants to have a conversation with his senior partner, but the senior partner doesn't listen. The president of France doesn't listen.
Yeah.
How do you deal with someone like that?
First of all, what that conversation that you'd like to set up, Diane, needs is a mediator in the middle. Because as soon as the people say, but we're embarrassed by you running around with this Italian model and not tending to the affairs of state, that needs to be reframed. If they say that to him, he'll get up and walk out of the room. But what a mediator would say is, President Sarkozy, it sounds to me like your people have concerns that you're not paying enough attention to their needs. And that he can respond to if you filter out all of the stuff about why they think he's not doing it. And that's the stuff that's offensive to him.
So he might be willing to talk about his girlfriend. He's just not willing to talk about his wife.
That could be too.
All right. Should we get closer to home here? I've got another great item in the news this week. And this is one of those questions that I've always wanted to ask you, Lee J. Berman, the professional mediator. Well, let me tell you the story really quickly. There is an inmate in the state of Colorado. He injured himself when he was breaking out of jail. Okay, now he is suing the jail on the grounds that the guards should have done more to stop him from escaping, or at least made it safer for him to escape. This guy, his name is Scott Gomez. He claims that he was really badly injured when he fell, get this, 40 feet. He gets to the top of the wall and he takes a header. He jumps 40 feet and he thinks they should pay for it because he got hurt. Now, this is going to some sort of arbitration.
Wow.
How do you mediate with somebody, Lee J., when you just, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, this is the crappiest case I've ever, this guy has no standing.
Well, I think escape safety is very important.
Oh, good Lord.
They should probably have courses to train the inmates how to escape safely so they don't injure themselves.
Yes.
Yeah, right, to teach the guards how to help the inmates not hurt themselves. I mean, come on. Isn't this ridiculous?
Wood chips, I think.
To break his fall.
Yeah, they started putting on the kids' playgrounds, the ground-up tires,
there
the rubberized.
Right.
And they need to put that outside the triple barbed wire fences that are surrounding the prison.
So when you pole vault over it. Well, Diane Diamond, you've finally done it. Diane, for our regular listeners know, Diane's always trying to find one where somebody has absolutely no case and ask me how they could mediate that. And usually I'm able to weasel out of it and find some way to have that conversation. It might surprise you to know that every now and then the cases that come before me as a professional mediator, some of them have absolutely no case at all. And the trouble is that you can't hit them over the head with the costs of taking something like this forward because they get an attorney to represent them on a contingency. So it's the attorney who's taking all the risk, and it's the client themselves, in this case, Scott Gomez, who's trying to go after the prison, has nothing to... It's basically like saying, step up to the crap table, put the dice in your hands, you get a free roll.
And maybe you get a day out of prison in court.
Exactly. Anything is better than a day in
Let me just use your name on these legal papers and maybe I can get some money for you and for me because I'm an attorney that needs some money.
Well, you know, the good attorneys look at a case and figure out if there's something that needs telling. When I hear a case like this, it's like the old Darwin Award guy who fell through the faux ceiling in a bank while he was trying to rob it and broke his leg and sued the bank for the personal injury and things. Part of me has to believe that there's a part of the story we're not hearing. Because I just want to believe that's the case.
No,
because
I don't think so.
Well, can I read you? I'll tell you something that you haven't heard yet. This is part of the legal document that was filed in court. This guy is named Scott Gomez. Gomez complained in court papers, quote, that the prison authorities did next to nothing to ensure that the jail was secure and that the plaintiff could not escape.
Yeah.
Next to nothing. Nobody else escaped.
Exactly.
So they must have been doing something right.
What about the bars and the guard towers? Did he not interpret as meaning, please don't try to leave? And the rifles.
So in other words, in this game of stump the mediator, have I stumped you on this one?
I think you have. There's not, I mean, given what Wheezy just said about even a day out of his jail cell, even if he goes to trial and loses, or an arbitration or something and loses quickly in one day, is a better day than sitting in a 9x12 cell or 9x6 cell or whatever he has. This is one where he's got nothing to lose, and one where I reach out to the members of the Bar Association and say, you got to be responsible. And if this guy has any kind of a case at all, I hope it comes out later in the press. And if it's just what we're reading on the surface, then some lawyer somewhere needs to find more productive things to do with his or her time.
You know what I think they should do? Like a bunch of lawyers get together on the outside of the prison, pick him up, and toss him back in.
But don't hurt him while you're doing it.
No. See, whatever happens, happens. That's my solution. Let them land on something very spiky.
Well, you know, the other thing, just to, on a serious note for a moment, we have a legal system where, because there is no penalty where the loser has to pay anything for bringing a frivolous case, to a certain extent, the system invites that. If they had to pay the state's defense costs, if they couldn't meet a burden of proof to show that they had a prima facie case, that they had something here that was something other than frivolous, then at least they'd have a cost-benefit analysis to proceeding and going forward. But in the system, the way it's set up right now, they take a flyer, they take a shot, the plaintiff's counsel probably spends $1,000 or $1,500 fronting costs, and if they lose, they lose, and if they win, the lawyer gets his name in the papers, and Scott gets to walk around beating his chest because he goes back to jail with something in his bank account for
they're not
going to
win.
Injured.
They're not going to win.
I'm not even sure he can collect if he wins because he's in prison. I mean, he's still, in fact, I imagine that they've added to his term for escaping and everything else. So I don't know. Some people would do anything to get their name in the paper, too.
I think if other people have some sort of problem, and you've already heard the phone call from Philip from the law firm who had a problem with a senior member, give us a call. Our number is 888-531-7171, 888-531-7171, or you could just email us at talkitover@gmail.com.
I think we have a phone call, Diane. Do you have more to say before we go to the phone?
No. Okay. Nope, that's
it. We have a 14-year-old Aaron on the phone. He's having a conflict with his parents.
Hey, Aaron, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Hello, Aaron.
Good.
What is going on between you and your parents, Aaron? What did you do to them? Are they tied up? Are they in a closet? Let them out.
Are you tied up?
Aaron, what's happening, Aaron?
Speak to us, Aaron.
Well, my parents think that I play too many video games and that they're addictive, and
they're right, young man.
And do you?
Next caller.
I want to see how I can introduce them to video games, see how they like them, you know, like when they get to know them. Because I think
you're like a drug dealer. You want to give them a little taste. And,
I think that, you know, they kind of feel, you know, fearful of video games a little bit because they don't really know what it's all about.
Well, I say you start them something on real soft, like, you know, Tetris or a Pac-Man, until they get a little taste. And then you hook them in with something like Halo, and then you go to the hard stuff like Medal of Honor, and then you can go out.
How do you know this stuff, Louise?
You can go out, leave the house, and they won't know you're gone for several days.
Next thing you know, they're hooked on Grand Theft Auto.
Exactly.
Child services is knocking at the door.
All right, back to his problem. They say, how many, let's be honest, Aaron, how many hours of video games do you play on a given day?
Well, it varies. It can range from not at all to around 5 hours.
See, does everyone see what happened, though, just now? This kid, this 14-year-old kid called. He didn't call with a problem. He called with a problem and his solution.
So let's back
up to the problem and see whether or not Lee J thinks that Aaron's solution is the solution.
Well, yeah.
And what are your parents saying? Can you tell us, Aaron, what their exact complaint is?
They have a few complaints, and, you know, sometimes they don't complain, so it's kind of hard to say exactly, but it can range from, like, I have to get all my work done to play video games, which I agree with, mm-hmm. to you can only play for, like, half an hour a day. And
oh, you can barely level up with that. Come on.
Clearly one of our co-hosts is a game junkie.
I do like video games.
Okay. Well, Aaron, one of the things you're talking about is a real problem, and that's when those in charge are enforcing the rules unfairly or unevenly. I mean, any of us that got a speeding ticket for going 56 on the freeway would think that's highly unfair because they let us go 65 miles an hour most of the time without bothering us much. Mm-hmm. So that inconsistent enforcement of rules is something that our government and our police deal with. It's something that parents deal with, and it's something that teachers deal with in school. So one of the things I'm hearing Aaron ask for is, tell me what the rules are and enforce them evenly, then I'll know how much time I get on the game each day or each week or whatever.
So it varies from day to day, Aaron? It just depends on how busy your parents are and how much they notice how much you're playing?
Or it also depends on how much I am playing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned getting your work done first. How are your grades?
I'd say they're pretty good.
Tell us what pretty good means.
Well, I'm homeschooled, so we don't really go, you know, with grades for most things. But I do take some classes at Pierce College, and I have A's in all my classes there.
Wait a minute,
you're 14.
You go to college? Play more video games.
Wow. So you're 14 years old, you're taking college courses, and your parents are complaining that you're playing video games too many hours. Now, wait a minute. Are these college courses like how to get to the next level in something or other video game?
No, what class? Yeah, what are you taking?
A math class and a golf class, although right now it's on a little break, but many more classes next semester.
Is it Wii Golf or actual golf?
Exactly.
No, do you have a Wii? Because you earlier talked about getting your parents involved. I mean, that's a nice family activity if you have a Wii. And everybody gets up off the couch and everybody's playing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And have they played it with you?
A few times, yeah.
But they didn't get hooked?
Well, my dad kind of likes it, but my mom's the main...
enforcer?
She's the main enforcer of video game law.
Do you have Marble Mania?
No, I don't.
Try that.
I've played the golf and the bowling, and I'm pretty good at the bowling one. Have you gotten your mom to bowl on the Wii?
Oh, yeah. She's gone bowling, I think, twice.
Matt, you have a video game story, Matt?
Well, actually, it's pretty much exactly this. My younger brother, the game designer, bought a Wii a year ago, and my parents, when visiting, my parents are in their 60s, really enjoyed playing games on the Wii. So this year for Christmas, we bought them a Wii.
Oh my God!
And
that's great.
I saw my
gets up off the couch.
Oh, it is. It's great for them. But what was very funny is I saw them about a week after Christmas. They came over, and both of them were exhausted, circles under their eyes. And I asked them, "I'm worried about you. You look sick. Are you guys okay?" And they said, "Well, we're fine. We were just up until 11 last night playing the Wii."
Well, you know, Aaron, I have an idea here because, look, you're obviously a very bright young man. You're 14 years old. You're already taking college classes, homeschooled, getting good grades. Your dad likes to play the video games. Could you somehow go into a little cahoots with Dad to get Mom more involved in the video games? And then she might lighten up on you a little bit.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm not the professional mediator. That's Lee J. But, maybe.
After you go to bed, get Dad to say to Mom, "Hey, come on, let's go play this thing."
I think consistency, it could also be the answer here. You know, it may be not just dependent on his work is done or not done. It should be 2 hours of video games a day means no TV or 2 hours of TV. I mean, it should be something consistent so that he knows every day how much he's going to get to play, and he can base his schedule around that.
And that's an important part of parenting for any parents is to set the ground rules and keep them. You know, sometimes parents just get worn down, and by Thursday of the week, they're tired of saying no, and so they say, fine, just go, you know. And it's important for kids to understand what the rules are and that they will be enforced. But I'd like to come back to Aaron's proposed solution that he called us with, mm-hmm. which was get them more engaged. Aaron, tell me a little bit more what you had in mind when you were thinking about getting them engaged in playing the games with you.
Well, as we said before, the Wii is a great way, you know, to get non-gamers into the gaming scene. So that would be good. My dad's already, you know, started to enjoy quite a bit of the Wii. And my mom, however, she's afraid, actually, of actually getting, like, getting sucked in.
Does mom have what we might call an addictive personality? Do you know what that means?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think she does.
Okay.
Does she have a little bit of a weight problem? Now, I'm serious about this because this is a way, and I have little kids in my family that they've got this Wii going, and we all get up and we're jumping around and we're playing tennis and baseball and bowling, and at the end of it, I'm like exhausted and sweating. It's maybe you could talk to her about it being like an exercise something.
Oh yeah, we have done that, like the Wii boxing. Most of the things we aren't really a workout, but Wii boxing, now there is a workout.
Can I tell you that both my wife and my niece, who's 10 years old, knocked me on my back in the boxing game every time I tried to play them Wii boxing.
Really?
It was their crowning moment for both of them. They're just like, I knocked you out.
Do you have Guitar Hero?
Oh, no. I was thinking about that, though.
I think your mom might like Guitar Hero. You might want to try that.
So, Aaron, let me just ask you one last question. You said earlier something about that you think they're afraid that video games are bad for you or something like that, you said. Tell me a little bit more about that. What do you think your parents suspect, and how might they be right or wrong about what video games do for people?
Well,
what do you think they're afraid of? If you play 5 hours a day, what do you think they're afraid of?
He'll never get married.
He's 14. It's not a big concern yet.
Okay, go ahead, Aaron.
Well, they may think that, if you do something long enough or, you know, enough so that you become so familiar with it, like, it becomes part of what you do all the time, and, you know, like, you get addicted to it. But I wouldn't say I'm addicted to it, you know. Play.
You don't.
They haven't said if you do it too much, you'll go blind or anything? Oh, never mind. That's an old joke.
You don't think you're addicted?
No, I don't. But, you know, that's probably what everyone says.
Uh-huh. And if you lived by yourself, how many hours a day would you play video games?
Now, that's a tough one because, you know, if I lived by myself, would I still have to do everything that I was doing now?
Like homework?
Well, you'd have to do work. You'd be doing some sort of work if you were a man. Let's say we jump forward 10 years and you're 24 years old and you live by yourself and you have a job. Would you come home and just play video games all evening, or would you want to have a social life beyond that?
Well, I definitely want to have a social life, but I'd probably also find some time to, you know, hang out with my console.
Mm-hmm. Hang out with my console.
You know, it's funny. The reason I asked the question, Aaron, is I've got a nephew who is really a sharp guy, and he was telling me one time that most people think that video games are just sort of addictive, and, you know, hours blow by on the clock, and you don't know where that part of your life has gone. But he was telling me that it actually does help with certain parts of the brain, that neuroscience studies have shown that that it stimulates parts of your brain and your hand-eye coordination and things like that.
Problem solving.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are even games that are coming out, like Brain Age and My Spanish Coach, that deal with, you know, specifically learning in a fun way. They're like activities that sharpen your mind.
I think all of this
these are the three things you tell your parents. That, number one, it helps you with your hand-eye coordination. It helps you exercise your brain so that you can learn other things better, and that it's great exercise.
And that you know how to kill zombies.
And by the same token, in all fairness, Aaron, it might be important for them to hear, if this is what you're feeling, to hear from you that sometimes it's hard because one day they let you play for 2 hours and the next day they're yelling at you after half an hour, and that, you know, you might need to sit down with them and say, let's figure out something so that I don't want to get in trouble. I want to be, you know, on the right side of things here, but I want to know what's expected of me. And, you know, these are the reasons that I think it's a good thing for me to be doing, but let's talk together about, you know, what we both think is healthy and appropriate given my school workload and my success in school and all those things.
What about if he presents a proposal? No, it just says, okay, look, yeah. It seems to be one way one day and another way another day, and I need to figure out how often I'm going to get to do this because it's frustrating for you and it's frustrating for me. I propose, if my work is done, 2 hours of video games before I have to go to sleep, and on weekends, 3 hours, or just whatever you want to write up, Aaron, and that will be a very grown-up thing for you to do, is say, can I have a meeting with you guys and have a copy for each of them and present them with it, and then they can talk to each other about it when mm-hmm. you're not there and come back with a counter offer or whatever. Yeah. Just treat it like a mediation or like
yeah, here's why I
like
think
this.
Yeah, here's why I think an hour and a half or 2 hours a day is fair, and here are the reasons why I think it's an okay activity, and here are what my grades have been. I think I've deserved it, and you know, if I'd rather do this than, you know, go outdoors and play or, you know, watch television or something, that it's my free time and you're teaching me to have discretion and make good decisions, and make your case for them. You sound like such a bright guy that my sense is you could present a case that would make them take it very seriously.
Okay, so Aaron, that's your homework assignment.
There you go.
We want you to do that, and then call us back and let us know what happens, because I can tell you're a very bright kid, just like Lee J says and Wheezy says. Write it down, write a proposal, make a Xerox, give it to them and say, here's our plan. So we don't have a problem anymore. Let's just make a plan. Here's my proposal. Do you have a counter proposal? And then call us back and tell us what happens, would you?
You bet.
Thanks for calling, Aaron.
Aaron, thanks for calling Talk It Over. Let us know how it comes out.
All right.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you have
a
problem.
Smart kid.
Well, we have smart listeners. If you have a problem that you would like to talk over with us, you can give us a call at 888-531-7171 or email us at talkitover@gmail.com. Our website is talkitoverradio.com. And let's get back to the news. Diane.
Well, I was going to say, too, even if we're not on the air, you can just leave us a voicemail, and then we can just put your voice on the air, and we can talk about it later, or send us an email, too. Anyway, anytime, because we check the email often. Well, we have some email, as a matter of fact.
Oh, good.
Let's go to the email.
Let's
How
go
about
to the
that?
Email.
Okay, here we go. This one is from Dorothy in St. Louis, Missouri. My husband and I have been happily married for 10 years. I'm an only child. He's one of three children. We live close to his parents, and his two sisters have married and moved away. They both live within about an hour of their parents' house. The problem is that my in-laws expect their son, my husband, to always be on hand for them for every birthday, holiday, and special occasion. It's hoped that the sisters will be there too, but if they aren't, it's okay. It's explained away with the phrase, well, they have their own lives now.
Ooh.
Well, my husband has his own life too, with me and our three children. However, when we don't make one of these events, my mother-in-law gets deadly silent and distant. I always keep quiet about this, but my husband is starting to seethe over it. How can I help him talk it over with his mother?
Bye, wow.
Get her a wee. Get her up off the couch. Tell her to go bowling or boxing.
Boy, that's just such a great question because
universal.
Yeah, that kind of sibling imbalance happens all the time. And, you know, the one who is the good son in this case, instead of being rewarded with some time off for good behavior and the pressure being put on his sisters, he's the one who has the higher expectation and they get to slide.
This definitely falls under the Dr. Phil-ism of we teach others how to treat us.
Yes.
He's not getting away with anything because he's always been good. They kind of grew up saying, hey, I got somewhere I need to be, and, you know, people just begin to accept that. So it's really up to him. People generally don't like it when other people in their lives start to change the dynamic.
Yeah.
And it can be a little bit, or it can be a lot difficult, but it seems as though your husband is going to be the one that has to say, no, I love you, and I'll see you at Thanksgiving, but right now, this weekend, we're doing this. And let her seethe. She'll get over it.
Yeah.
I don't know how, you know, I don't know how our listener convinces her husband to make that change. It may not be possible. He may not be ready to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think she's probably smart to just stay out of it. She says she always keeps quiet when this happens, but her husband is starting to seethe. So that's not a good emotion, is it?
No.
I mean, you need to take that seethe and figure out how to use it to talk it over.
So the first thing she has to do is talk it over with her husband.
Right.
She and it can't be her agenda, or he'll defend his mother. So it really has to be her observing him saying, sweetheart, it looks like you're really upset. Let's talk about this. What about this is bothering you so much? And, you know, draw him out into a conversation where he's the one making his own case about what his feelings are about his mother's responses. Then brainstorm together about how to approach her or what to do about it. But then the conversation with the mother has to be, I like Wheezy's idea about not being available all the time. I mean, if we were to diagnose this, we get into the codependent relationship between the son and the mother. But in terms of how to talk it over and how to fix the problem, that's really about sitting down with them, and rather than sort of tossing it in her lap and saying, oh, we just can't be there, but we'll see you at Thanksgiving, which is a good start. I think the better thing to do is to sit down with them and say, let me tell you what's going on. We've got things with the kids this weekend. We just can't be there for yours and Dad's anniversary, but Thanksgiving is 3 weeks from now.
I think they should be there for the anniversary.
And Aunt Sally's birthday and Christmas and Thanksgiving and Easter and Valentine's Day and St. Patrick's Day.
Suddenly every 3 weeks there's something, right?
And
so what you've got to do is sit them down and say, we have our own lives too. And, you know, our kids are getting of a certain age where we've got to be at their events and they have things to do. And we're going to continue to see you every chance we can. But just like my sisters, we have a life too, and we have things that we need to do. So I don't want you to be upset that we're going to miss this next event, whatever it is. But like Wheezy said, we'll be at the next one, whatever the next one is.
And we love you.
Yeah, and we love you. And, you know, this isn't about you as much as it is about us needing to be there for our kids. And, you know, and by the way, would you like to come celebrate your anniversary by watching our kids' soccer game next Saturday or, you know, whatever?
We're watching our kids so we can go out and have a meal by ourselves.
Yeah, some quality time with your grandchildren.
It does all come down to just getting your feelings out there and telling people what you're really thinking. And with this guy, you know, it's the only son syndrome is what I'm seeing here.
Yeah.
The only son, and you got to be here because, you know, you got to help with grandma or grandpa or whatever.
He likes that role to a certain extent.
Or he wouldn't be playing it this long. Yeah. He's taught them, like Wheezy said, he's taught them that he's going to be responsible and be there all the time. And so he's managed their expectations. And remember, we're always saying that conflict is mismanaged expectations. They've been led to believe he's going to have perfect 100% attendance at every family event, and it's something he can't live up to, but he dug that hole himself, and now he's got to figure out how to re-examine their expectations for him, and he's got to relay those expectations.
Yeah, when you got three kids, suddenly your old life is not the way your life is anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
And the important thing is to keep the relationship at the forefront. Like Wheezy said, say I love you, say I'm really sorry we can't be there, and let them down gently. Otherwise you're gonna get a harsh reaction from them like she's described.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is just having that difficult conversation. And then after that, everything gets better. And if you don't have it, it stays crappy.
Exactly.
Anyway, somebody else who emailed us at talkitover@gmail.com is Paul in Portland, Oregon. This is a good one. My wife has the idea that all the money I make is ours. I'm the primary breadwinner in the family, but we're certainly not well off. And that all the money she makes is her money to spend on things like clothes, jewelry, and the salon. I've tried to talk to her about this, but she just laughs and says that's the way her parents always operated. How can I talk it over with her without seeming stingy?
Great question, Paul.
Isn't that a good one?
Yeah.
Well, cut up her credit cards.
I'm listening closely to this answer, by the way.
Hello, Mrs. Matt.
Hi, Mrs. Matt. If you're listening, cover your ears.
money problems are the biggest, one of the biggest problems in marriages.
Number one cause of divorce.
So I don't
really?
Know.
Yes.
I'm going to just defer to Lee J here. I don't even have a joke about this.
The good part is because it's something tangible, like the household budget, it's very easy to sit down around the kitchen table and say, or, you know, on the living room sofa and say, you know what, let's take a look at this. I've put this together, Paul can say. Here are all of the household bills, the mortgage and the power bill and, you know, the kids' schools or, you know, whatever's on that list of all the overhead expenses. Here's my income and here's your income. After taxes, here's how much we net. Here's what the expenses are. It looks like we have disposable income of X dollars per month. And have her first notice that her income is in the household income and that the expenses are everybody's. And, you know, then they can talk about how much they want to save and put away for retirement and things like that. And have the conversation about how much money we have, how much we bring in, how much we spend. Mm-hmm. You know, here are all the credit card bills and everything else. And it looks like we have, it's just, it's a discussion not about you and your money, and it's not yours, it's mine, it's ours. It's a discussion about us together and we and our money and what we have left after all of that to spend and making decisions about how we're going to spend that and figuring out what's responsible. She'll get the idea at that point that it doesn't just grow on trees and that he's not simply making plenty to pay the bills and that she can spend all the rest freely.
You know, don't you think that they probably should have had this kind of conversation before they got married?
Of course.
But people don't.
Right. That's you know, a time of joy and bliss, and you're planning a wedding, and you're ready to kill each other. First of all, you don't yet know. I mean, most couples, unless you meet very late in life, don't already have a home at that point. They don't know what their mortgage is going to be. It's a discussion that every couple ought to have every 6 months. They ought to calendar it, and they ought to say, okay, you know, it's January 15th, it's July 15th, let's sit down and review the numbers. I mean, in our household, we've got them on an Excel spreadsheet. We pull them up and review them every 6 months or so.
Really?
And
can I get a copy?
No, and we take a look and we say, all right, here's where your income is, here's where mine is, and, you know, here's what the mortgage and the cars and everything else costs us, and let's just see how much we're putting away for savings. And all it does is refocus you. It's not like, you know, my wife and I don't say, okay, we have, you know, $100 budget this week to spend on dinner, but it helps refocus you on the big picture that we've got to be putting away for saving and retirement. We've got to be mindful of what we're spending. And the fact that the pronoun is always we or us helps make her feel included and make her recognize that she's part of the solution and she's part of the problem and that it's a shared obligation mm-hmm. and it's a shared benefit.
Mm-hmm. And if she doesn't get it, Wheezy, what? Dump her?
Oh, I don't want to get that extreme. I just think he should go out and buy a big boat. Give her a little taste.
If I had a boat.
You know, I just saw that old movie. What was it? The Melvin Dumar Howard Hughes movie?
Mm-hmm.
Howard and Melvin, anyway, and that's mm-hmm. what he did. He went out and bought a big fat boat.
Oh.
Anyway, and then she left him. So, we have more email, you know, at talkitoverradio.com. We get a lot of email, and I want to try to get some of them in here today. Let's see. Here's a good one. This is Mary in Grandview, Missouri, and she says that she and her husband married late in life. They're both in their 40s. They're both professional, no career. Professional careers, no children. This is what she writes. We have a sweet little house overlooking a river, and it all seemed very peaceful until the brood next door moved in. She is a psychologist. He is a writer. To say they are bohemian is an understatement. But they also brought with them four children adopted from third world countries. The kids range in age from 6 to 12 years old. The couple opens their door early in the morning and lets the kids roam free. They yell, they scream, they come on our property, they ride bikes through our flowers, they even come up and knock on our windows to get our attention. We've tried talking to the bohemian couple several times, but they always say that since they homeschool the kids, quote, they have to blow off steam somehow. Oh, I'd strangle them. Anyway, in this housing market, Mary writes, it's impossible for us to sell right now. We've tried talking it over with them. So now what do we do, Lee J?
How much is a moat?
That's pretty good. I
That's
don't
beautiful.
Know if Mary's listening. Maybe she could give us a phone call.
And I got to tell you, Diane, when you started with the sweet little house overlooking the river, I thought maybe Mary in Grandview, Missouri was actually your pen name or something. Because I know you yeah, overlook the Hudson up there.
No, I have a crazy old man that lives next to me that, the neighbors call him Santa Claus on acid.
Whoa. Oh, my.
So, yeah, now I have the opposite problem. I'm too old and cranky.
Old and cranky neighbors. They don't
old
run
and
through
cranky.
Your garden. Okay.
Well, when I look at a problem like this, the thing that I always think about is the old adage I was taught when I was a kid. You've got the freedom to swing your arms around wherever you want to until you're swinging them in somebody else's space. Then you've invaded somebody else's space. And it sounds to me like when they're talking to the neighbors next door, when Mary has sat down to talk to the neighbors, and the neighbor says they've got to blow off steam somehow, I think Mary has to say, you're absolutely right, and I fully support that. But what you have to realize is that once they invade my garden and my space and are knocking on my windows and messing with my world, then they've gone too far, because I also have a right to my own privacy, my own quiet enjoyment of my house. So Mary has to talk about, I'm not concerned that your kids are blowing off steam. I think it's great that they're healthy and they're running and they're playing and they're being kids. Mm-hmm. God bless them. I mean, in this day and age, it's wonderful that they have the kind of sort of innocent life that they can run around and play in the streets and that mom's not peering out the window to make sure they don't get kidnapped or something like that. But Mary has to say, the only thing I need to do is sit down with you and figure out where to draw kind of a boundary, because if they're interfering in my watching television or my whatever I want to do in my home and they're disrupting me, then that creates a problem for me. So let's talk about how they can do what they still want to do and what you want them to do and what I want them to do without interfering with me and my ability to enjoy my home. So you're having a conversation not about can they or can't they, are they or aren't they entitled to do what they're doing, but more about let's find a win-win. Let's figure out how to get my needs met and their needs met at the same time. So, maybe it's as simple as they come out the front door and take a left and go the other way in the neighborhood and leave poor Mary alone.
Well, let me ask you this, because this would be my style. I don't know that this mother, bohemian hippie mother, is ever going to be inclined to do that. And my solution would be to get to know the kids, walk outside and say, hey, guys, I was taking a nap. Could you run and play somewhere else, and maybe come by later, and I'll make a paper airplane for you or something. Just get to know the kids, and maybe they'll respect.
Oh, Wheezy, come on! You bring them in the house, and you teach them how to do stand-up comedy. We know that.
No, but I don't. Are they going to the mom? Is that really going to solve this problem?
You have to start there.
Yeah, and you can't directly ask the kids to not disturb you.
Well, I'm not saying you can't, but I'm saying it's respectful to go to the mom first.
Okay.
If you go to, imagine if you had kids and they were out there playing and some other neighbor person came out and the kids went back to the mom, because kids will twist things the way that they understand them. But if your kids come back to you and say, the lady next door said we couldn't play over there, then suddenly you've got a conflict with the mom. So better you've approached the mom first and get the mom to say, hey, I'll do my best. Then you might even say, let me ask you this. I'm not a mean person or anything. If they're playing in my yard and it's bothering me, what would you like for me to do? Is it okay with you if I go out there and talk with them and let them know? Or would you rather have me call you so you can talk to them? Whatever makes you more comfortable as a parent, I'm willing to do. And then she gets the point that, something's going to happen here. I guess I have to decide what that's going to be.
Yeah, because I think from what I'm reading from Mary, it's like, okay, we've tried to talk to these crazy hippies that live next door and they're not listening. So it almost sounds like she's thinking of calling the police or something.
That's such an extreme last measure. I like Wheezy's idea much sooner than that, to talk to the kids and just be really nice. And
be cool. Don't be that mean lady on the porch with a broom.
and this is what happens when we react. Then we go charging out there and we start screaming our head off, you stupid kids, get out of my yard, because we're reacting to the frustration of the moment. Mm-hmm. But if we take a step back and think about if we were out there being kids playing in the yard, what would we respond to best? We're going to come to the same conclusion Wheezy has, that somebody who's just cool says, hey guys, would you mind? I'm trying to da-da-da-da-da right now. Would you mind going down the street? And, you know, the kids will go, oh, sure, no problem.
Yeah, but cookies. I think cookies would help. If you gave them a cookie and then said, now go away.
Sure, like stray cats, like, and they'll be back the next day making noise just so they get cookies. And by the way, do you have any Cokes?
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. Well, Mary, if that works, let us know. And if it doesn't, give us a call.
Give us a call, yeah.
Because we'd love to put you on. 888-531-7171. So anybody got any personal conflicts this week? I do have one minor one, but... Anybody?
Well, let's hear the minor one.
I have one, but we can.
No, I didn't. I went first last week. You tell me.
I'm just
yours.
Picturing Diane with a yellow hat with a headlight in the middle of it, like she's mining. Oh, yeah. What kind of mining dispute have you got?
No mining. Oh, I get it. Ha ha.
What do you got, Diane?
Okay, I'll tell you mine really quick. You mentioned just now that I live on the Hudson River, and I do, and it's lovely, and I have woods around, and there's a national forest very close, and I have about an acre of land here. So you can imagine all the flora and fauna I have. I had a lousy raccoon on my deck the other night that made a mess, but besides all that, we have every year about this time an infestation of ladybugs. Now, where I grew up, ladybugs are good luck. Apparently, where my husband grew up in Queens, New York, you're supposed to get a gun out and shoot them all.
I was going to say, ooh, an infestation of ladybugs. That sounds life-threatening, Diane.
Well, it's not. You know what they do? They cozy up in the cracks of the windows, and they hibernate. Ladybugs hibernate.
Oh,
and then
that.
In the spring, of course, they're great because they go out and they eat the aphids or, you know, whatever the hell they do. I don't know. But it's a ladybug, for goodness sake. My husband wants to call the exterminator to come in and kill all the ladybugs in the cracks of the windows. And I'm like screaming at him, assassin, you're a murderer. What are you talking about? So I think I've got him talked into just leaving them alone. But what if he brings this up again? How do I talk it over with him?
Well, the first thing you've got to do is rather than trying to overpower him with you're right and he's wrong, start with, what about this bothers you so much? and have him just say, I just don't like him around. And you can dig deeper and say, why though? What is it about having, you know, ladybugs don't make big webs like spiders. They don't bite like mosquitoes. What is it about them that really bothers you so much? And let him figure it out. Because my guess is he doesn't know. It's just a foreign creature that I don't want in my house is probably what he's responding to.
Yeah, that really is it. I mean, he thinks they're like flies or something, like they're dirty. They're not. They're ladybugs, for goodness sake.
They're ladybugs.
Yeah, I told you it was a minor sort of a conflict. But so
you guys will survive this.
But you've got to have a conversation with them about what you're telling us, that they're not nuisances, and that the truth is we had a problem with white flies in our garden, and we had to go out and buy ladybug eggs so that they would hatch, so that would be their home, so they wouldn't leave, so that they would eat the white flies.
Tell him
which
that
were
story.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
Then he'll round up the ladybugs and sell them.
Well, and one year when we were here, he came into me, and again, I grew up in the country. He grows up in the, you know, cement jungle, and he comes to me one day and he says, look at this creature I found out. Oh my God, what is this? I said, that's a praying mantis. They're good.
Yeah.
They eat aphids. They're good. Oh, all right. I was going to kill it. I said, put it back in the garden. So... there's a whole cultural conflict here. But yes, I think that's right. I'll ask him, what is it that bugs you so much about the ladybugs?
Oh, good.
Okay. All right. I'll let you know what he says.
Yeah.
Well, my problem is probably more boring and more complicated. So I don't know how much time
pull up
have.
A chair, crack open a beer. Go ahead, Lise.
Lie down on the couch.
10 minutes, so I'm sure we can cover half of it.
Yeah. Well, I produce stand-up comedy shows in Santa Barbara, and I have a new Tuesday night show at a very fancy, nice nightclub called Stateside. And we...
Now, is this a new venue,
yes,
Louise?
Yes, it's a new venue, and it is schmancy. It is really high-end, and...
Do you have to wear a dress?
I've never seen you in a dress, Louise.
I probably should.
I did once.
Was it a funeral or what?
A wedding.
Okay.
I wore a dress to a wedding. Ahead. Yes, I have worn dresses to weddings and other occasions. But this is hard to explain. But, you know, we've been running a Thursday night room for about a year and a half very successfully. So it did not take us long at all to get this Tuesday night room to take off like gangbusters. I mean, it is packed with people after four shows. But after three shows, we had to take two Tuesdays off because Tuesday was Christmas and Tuesday was New Year's. And in that time period, somebody emailed the owner of this restaurant and said, I am a freelance show producer, and I would like to bring Fred Armisen from Saturday Night Live to your comedy show and have your comedy producers sort of take the night off and let me run this show, charge $15 cover. It'll be great advertising. I'll get all the newspapers to come out because he's on Saturday Night Live. And I felt like the club owner was kind of twisting my arm to let this guy do this, and we had only done three shows. I didn't feel like I had the right to say, I don't want anyone else jumping on our show. So I said okay, and now I'm regretting that, and the guy is kind of becoming surly, and I wish I could take it back and say, we don't want you charging a $15 cover, and it will alienate the people that have been coming. All of a sudden, they'll see there's a $15 cover, and what if Fred Armisen can't even do stand-up comedy? He's a good sketch comedian on Saturday Night Live. I've never seen his stand-up, and it's the show is completely taken away from me, and I'm not going to have any control over its quality or how people.
Well, but yeah, what the bottom line here is. What? Somebody horned in on your action,
right? But I rolled over,
yeah,
and I guess I just have to live with that.
So, if you had it to do again, what would you do differently?
I would say, can we share the night? I've already booked a headliner. His name's Paul Agata. He's wonderful. And if you want to share the night, we could share the night. $15 is too much. Let's charge $10. It's a Tuesday night. I should have asserted myself more and not let him hijack my night. And now it's becoming a problem because other people that work at the club are saying, I can't believe you said yes to this. We were all sure you'd say no. Well, if I had done four shows, I would have said no, because the fourth show was insane. It was just standing room only, packed, 200 people. But we'd only done three, and it was during the holidays, and they were pretty full, but they weren't as packed as it was about to get, and it just the timing wasn't right, and I'm afraid that he's going to kind of ruin the role that we're on, and I don't really have a right to take back what I told him I was willing to do.
So what would you like to do?
I would like to share the night with him and still have our guy go up as well.
Yeah, but it's too late for that now, isn't it, Louise?
I probably, but he's been acting like a jerk on emails, and I don't know. I don't have anything in writing. I know I don't have any. I guess word of mouth is a contract. I mean, not word of mouth, but a
oral agreement.
A oral agreement is a contract, right?
Yeah.
It sounds to me, though, like what you've really got to do is sit with the owner of the club, mm-hmm, and go revisit the initial relationship that you established with him. Have a conversation that says, you know, here's what I came. Remember, here's what I came here to accomplish. Here's what our goal was. We wanted to create some momentum. I'm going to be here every week. I'm going to be bringing tons of comedians up here and put you on the map with a Tuesday night comedy night that's going to draw traffic. And my sense is we've gotten away from that goal, and I'd like to figure out with you how we go about getting back to that. And if Tuesday night's not a good night because you want to do the Saturday Night Live guy?
No, it's just 1 week. It's just one show.
Okay.
This guy's only asking for one show, but it still could interfere with our momentum. If our customers come and see $15 to see this and it doesn't turn out to be a good show because I'm not going to be the one producing it,
it's probably important that in fact, maybe you make up a little thing to hand out at the door that says, you know, our regularly scheduled comedy nights with, you know, Wheezy's blah, 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 whatever you call it, you know, at $10 a night, we'll return starting next Tuesday. Hope we'll see you back next Tuesday.
That's a good
idea.
Both
for those who walk in and for those who might turn away and balk. But, you know, to have one of your people at the door, even a comic who can joke with them and laugh and let them know our regularly scheduled programming will resume next Tuesday. That at least preserves your momentum and what you're trying to accomplish and doesn't send the wrong message that 1 week.
That's a very good idea.
And you know, for listeners who are out in the country and may not realize this, this is all due to the writer's strike, right? And Fred Armiston, who's a big deal on Saturday Night Live, has nothing to do because the writers are on strike and Saturday Night Live is all reruns.
And I'm sure he's a great guy and he'll probably put on an amazing show. It's just let myself get rolled over.
I hear you. But I would say that Lee J's exactly right. I mean, what do I know? He's the professional mediator. But I would say you got to sit down with the owner of this place and say, you know, this is really going to be a great deal. This is really cool. But it is only 1 week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to lose. I fear that you may lose the crowd that we've already built up for you here at a lesser cover if they think that this is the only that this is going to be the new norm. Mm-hmm. And I just want to make it clear that you and I are still on the same page, sir, and that this is a one-time event.
Mm-hmm. And then I totally agree with Diane, because the other piece is, if they want to hang around as long as the writer's strike is on because they want a room to go play in, mm-hmm. that's going to be seductive to the owner for a minute until he realizes that they're married to somebody else. He's having an affair with a married comedian. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as the writer's strike goes back, as soon as the writers go back to work, he disappears and leaves the club owner high and dry, where you're the one who wants to be in there establishing a show and want to make sure that you control that Tuesday night going forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you need to sit him down right away before it becomes a second Tuesday night and
right.
a third Tuesday
right.
night, because the
right.
writer's strike still hasn't been settled.
Oh, they're not even at the table talking now.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
All right, we have 5 more minutes. What is there left for us to cover?
Do we have more emails?
Oh, well, there's just so many things. Pardon me?
Do we have more emails?
Well, I actually have a funny story that I thought maybe we could end with.
Oh, great.
This actually happened. Louise, you sent me this. Oh, no, wait. Actually, here's the one that I want to end with. There is a mayor in Sikeston, Missouri, who, I'm sorry, Lee J. Berman, you may be a professional mediator, but this guy definitely does not want to talk it over in his town. He is so sick of litter bugs that he wants the police in Sikeston, Missouri, to immediately ticket them and, if need be, throw them in jail. He was at a recent city council meeting, and this mayor, his name is Mike Marshall, spoke of his profound frustration with all the litter in his town. Now, here is the quote from him. "It drives me crazy, and it just aggravates me. I was driving down the street, and someone rolled their window down and throwed out a hamburger sack and soda out the window."
Wow.
And what did he do about it?
he does not want to give anybody a warning. He doesn't want to talk it over with people. He doesn't want to have a public relations campaign about why littering is bad. He just wants to throw these people in jail and give them a big fat ticket.
How about just an Indian with a single tear?
Well, I think this will work until
Native American, sorry.
until his one jail cell is overstuffed with people and they're littering out into the lobby of his
and they litter the
jail.
Tickets all the way up the steps.
And then
they
try and escape.
Or until somebody gets robbed or something more violent than that, and the police are busy giving littering tickets instead of looking for more violent crimes and things. I think this is just what happens when you elect an obsessive compulsive mayor.
With bad grammar.
Whom apparently must be a vegetarian.
They throwed out a hamburger sack. But come on, you know, this is probably, you're going to get one of those lawyers that we always talk about here on Talk It Over, and they're going to take him to court for excessive something, whatever. Isn't there a way to sit down a headstrong person like that, somebody who's like in charge of a big thing, like in this case the whole town, sit down and talk it over with them to bring them back from the brink of insanity?
Well, yeah, you can certainly sit down and have that conversation with them, and you can negotiate some sort of a fix. The truth is, to waste, and I don't necessarily mean waste, but it sounds to me like a waste of a judge's time, a court clerk's time, filing all the papers, having a prosecutor prosecute these people, and going through the expense and all of that sounds counterproductive. And it sounds to me like the best fix would be to say, we're going to give you warning this time. if you're caught doing it again, you get 100 hours of public service wearing one of those orange vests going around picking litter up around the city. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like the kids who do all the tagging and graffiti that they send out to clean it up for hours and hours and hours in front of all their friends and that kind of thing. It seems to me that, a fix that more directly addresses the problem and would curb the behavior is a whole lot better than, taking them through a traditional criminal proceeding and perhaps even making worse criminals out of them.
You know, here in New York, they're starting a program that for kids and for drivers who ride their bike safely or drive their car safely, they pull them over and they give them a $5 gift certificate.
Oh, wow.
So maybe instead of negative reinforcement, you give them some positive reinforcement. People are getting these $5 gift certificates to Dunkin' Donuts to go get a bun and a coffee, and they just feel terrific about it just because they stopped at a stop sign properly.
I think it's pretty impressive they could squeeze a Dunkin' Donuts gift certificate out of the hands of a police officer. I'm sorry, that was too easy.
Yes, cue the applause.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank Diane Diamond for being with us. Thank you,
Yay,
Vijay.
Diane.
Thank you, Matt, Siggy Sigmund.
You're very welcome.
And our producer, Trish.
She's waving.
She's waving. And we will see you next week. Thank you very much. Talk It Over is over.